Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today with Let's Face the Issues. Let me remind you that the telephone number is 831-0917. Your telephone call gets you directly through to our studios and right to our microphones so that we can entertain your question, your comment, your dialogue and discussion. It is open mic day. I call it bits and pieces. I like to share some fragments and parts of the international news, and especially from the perspective of how it affects Christians and how it affects the conservatives in America. I believe that every Christian ought to be registered to vote. In 2016, I believe the number was something like 31 million Christians that did not vote. Ladies and gentlemen, shame on you if you're one of that 31 million. Need to be registered to vote. We need to vote. Back in 2012, I believe it was, published a book, Is It Time for Revolution? And I stated on the cover, in fact, there will be a revolution. Will it be in the on the battlefield or the ballot box? My preference is to see the revolution on the at the ballot box, where we, the people, the conservatives in America, stand up, speak up, be heard, be seen. Because, ladies and gentlemen, any one of the socialist, Marxist, communist candidates running for president, if any one of those goes into office, it will be doom and devastation and destruction and persecution and prosecution for the Christians in America. Our religious liberties will absolutely be destroyed, vacuous, void, gone, nada, nothing. I don't know how I could say it any more dramatically and dogmatically than that. Ladies and gentlemen, do you recall Nancy Pelosi recently said that what President Trump is doing to fight the coronavirus is too little, too late? You recall her saying that? Of course, Chuck Schumer said that as he looks over his reading glasses and speaks to the camera, and he pronounces doom and gloom because President Trump is the president and the coronavirus has also hit America now. And then Nancy Pelosi says it's too little, too late. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that they think that we have forgotten the Obama administration. I think that they think that we are ignorant of the history past. Ladies and gentlemen, it was in 2009, under the Obama administration, that we had the H1N1 virus. You recall that, some of you. America saw about 1,000 deaths in America before Obama did anything to combat the virus. Here's the article. Fact check. Obama waited until millions infected and 1,000 deaths in America before declaring the H1N1 virus an emergency. It's called, let's call it the Trump virus, urged a New York Times. This is from the printing, from the fake news now, that said this. Let's call it Trump virus, urged the New York Times opinion writer conspiratorially. Nancy Pelosi grossed that President Trump waited too long to attack the coronavirus and then impetuously declared he couldn't have left over any unspent Ebola virus money to fight it with, while Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer, looked down his nose and over his glasses to intone that it was the end of the world and that the president hadn't spent enough money to stop the scourge. Joe Biden and Michael Bloomberg have both called out the politicization of the virus. By their rights, Trump's doing it all wrong of what they're saying. They are praying for a pandemic filled with infected people and decimating of the stock market just to fix Trump's wagon, as it would be called, in his reelection campaign. Now that the whole Russian secret agent and peeping Tom aspect in the story all went belly up, end quote. Ladies and gentlemen, it's horrific to understand, to think about, and get our minds around the fact that here's an administration that's doing everything right. Before one death in America, President Trump had already assimilated a major, major, major task force to be at the cutting edge, the spear's point, to do everything possible to protect all Americans from the coronavirus. And here's the left that's wishing for, hoping for, praying for, if I can use the insert that term, that somehow, some way, there will be a catastrophe, health-wise a catastrophe, just so that it'll make Trump look bad, so the stock market will plummet, so that Trump cannot be reelected. I don't know if you could think of anything any more wicked, any more vile, any more evil than that. I believe I have a caller on the line. Go with your question or comment, please.
You know, these communist Marxists, they feed on needy people. They need needy people in order for them to be elevated into positions of power, to maintain power, to grab more power. They need catastrophe. They need disasters. They need, again, poor people, people that are genuinely needy. That's why in the midst of this chaos, they're still for open borders. Can you imagine hospitals across the United States overrun by individuals that walk in the door, demand service? By the way, under federal law, they cannot be refused service. So you imagine illegals flooding into hospitals, demanding service in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of a disaster, in the middle of a catastrophe, and actually exacerbating the nature of it, the level of it. Matter of fact, as we watch this take place, as this coronavirus, as this COVID-19 spreads, and mortality rates are anywhere from the high 1% to the as much as 20% mortality rates. Can you imagine walking into a hospital? You've got a cough, and it's been going on for a few days, and you're unable to catch your breath. It seems like you walk into a hospital, and the emergency room is packed full. And every single suite is packed full. By the way, in areas where they are your sanctuary cities, that's going to happen. Those cities, you know, places in California where they have an estimated 11 million illegal aliens, according to some estimates, they'll walk into those hospitals, demand the services. By the way, when they walk out of the hospitals, you will pay the bill because there's nowhere to send the bill for an individual that is illegally in this country. They're illegally in this country. And you will be in line behind those individuals. And this is not, you know, Trump was accused of xenophobia when he, early on in this, he saw the numbers and he said, we're shutting off travel from these parts of China. Immediately, yeah. Chuck Schumer took to Twitter and said Trump was a racist. He was a xenophobe. He was, you know, he was overreacting. This is, a major overreaction. Now, Schumer has gone out and tried to erase that tweet. It didn't work for him because we've already recorded that tweet. That's public knowledge. It was an overreaction by Trump. It was xenophobia by Trump 5 weeks ago. Today, supposedly, according to Trump, Schumer and Pelosi, Trump's reaction has been infinitesimally small. It was a too small of a reaction, and it's too late. Well, hold on a second. Get it straight. Which way is it? Was it an overreaction then or an underreaction now? You folks need to get your story straight. But again, the left, the socialists, the Marxists, they must have this level of chaos. They must. That's the only way they can achieve power, gain power, maintain power. And for anybody that's of a socialist mentality listening today, I challenge you, go to a socialist country and tell me you like it better than you like America. You won't have your iPhone and sit down in your Starbucks and tweet your problems about society or Facebook your problems about society. First off, the government's going to squelch your communication. Second off, you're not going to have access to a $1,000 phone and a $50 or $60 or $70 a month bill for your phone. You're not going to sit down at a Starbucks because they're not going to survive in a socialist society when it's really $5 coffee. You can't get anything for less than $5. You sit as a socialist in this country and you enjoy all the wonders of capitalism restrained by some modicum of Christian restraint. You go to a socialist country and see how good you live. They flee those countries in order to come to places like this. Send Bernie Sanders down to Venezuela and say, Bernie, when you fix Venezuela, come back here and show us how it's done. His strategy has been tried over and over and over. There's death and devastation. There's starvation everywhere socialism goes. It's absurd. It's completely absurd.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with one of our sons. Notice I said our. My bride always tells me it's not your son, it's our sons. So, and that's a little in-home joke that we have. But we're talking today with Greg Youngblood, one of our sons. Greg is up in the mountains of Tennessee, and he enjoys the cold weather and enjoys the snow and the ice. I don't. But Greg does tell me that he tells me that when the rapture comes, he'll get to heaven quicker because he's closer. Now, that could be true. I don't know. But, Greg, thank you for calling in and let's talk about these things. Greg, I've had a conversation before my broadcast today with a gentleman. We were talking about this socialist, Marxist, communist. We're talking about the Bernie Sanders sense of, how would you say, power and the number that's following him. And this gentleman said that it's partly our fault that Bernie Sanders has the following. And I said, explain. He said, well, with the group that is in the millennial age group today, he said the parents of those in the millennial age group brought them up fully expecting to be given everything. That that age group parent brought up when they had nothing and it was difficult, they worked hard, gained, and were able to accomplish something. And that he said, and we did not want our children to be brought up having nothing. And so we gave them everything they wanted. So as a result of that, his take on this, he says, as a result of that, they've grown up having everything given to them. So they expect that is the should be the norm, the way of life. And when they get out of home from mom and dad, they expect the government or the world to continue to give them what they want and take care of their every need. And therefore, he says it's our problem, our fault that causes that. Because in my conversation, I was talking about the socialist, Marxist, communist professors in the universities that's teaching them that socialism is good and that capitalism is bad. Share with our listeners the pros and the cons of that and what is the cause and effect. Why are we seeing the I believe the statistics say that 78% of the Bernie Sanders followers and supporters, 78% think that socialism is good and that capitalism is bad. Why do we see that phenomenon?
We have a generation coming up today, this millennial generation, and the Gen Zs. These folks are some of the most educated, yet some of the most ignorant people I've seen in my entire life, and it's not entirely their fault. Yeah, you know, it's the parents' fault, but it's the professors' fault. We have literally since we have started our Department of Education, since we've injected government into education here and there and everywhere, our academic standards have fallen and fallen and fallen and fallen. We keep shifting the scores. Even your SAT, it gets scored totally differently. We're adjusting mathematic tests bend to ethnic variations. I mean, things that should be pure science are now subjective and speculative. Professors that in the 70s, the 60s, were against the war in Vietnam. I mean, we had, 58,000 lives, American lives lost there. And you can argue back into as to whether or not we should have ever been there, but it was truly fighting the spread of communism. When we fought World War II, literally, we fought off socialism and communism on one aspect and had a communist nation as an ally in another respect. But we had generations that fought against this spread of socialism and communism. And today there's an embrace. Well, you find your anti-war protesters of the 60s and 70s, many of those rolled right into the classroom as professors.
Yes,
and for decades now, they've taught our students, they've taught our kids to hate capitalism and to embrace communism. These folks were, many of them, closet communists, closet socialists themselves, and that's why they were against the war. That's why they didn't want to see what they perceived as their allies being fought against. They liked that ideology, even though it cost 100 million lives in the past century. They love that ideology. They love the power that comes with that ideology. They see themselves as the top of the pile of poop because they will turn this nation into poop if they're given the opportunity. But they see themselves like Elizabeth Warren pulling down, I understand, a $400,000 salary at Harvard for teaching her one little course. If these socialists, if these Marxists, if these communists believed half of what they claim to believe, they wouldn't be charging crazy amounts of money to teach in our college. But they do. You see colleges and universities full of this type, of this ilk, and it goes all the way back to, and I've expressed this before, the early 20th century when John Dewey, an avowed communist, Marxist, socialist, whatever, he was running the National Education Association for a dozen years. He started the ball rolling, and 100 years later, we see how that ball rolling has mushroomed. We see how half of these millennials, half of them, fully embrace communism as a proper ideology, a proper financial system, a proper course for our United States. The decimation that will come with that, and they're ignorant to it. They're completely ignorant to it. Every time you point out a fallen, a failed socialist or communist government, they'll say, well, that wasn't real socialism. That wasn't real socialism. Literally, they are taught that the real problem with Nazi Germany was nationalism. It's national socialism. It was socialism, folks. Don't you realize the feeding frenzy, the spending frenzy that goes on? Right now, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, one after another, talk about free college. You know, the other day when Bernie Sanders said that, he said, I have a $1.3 trillion plan to make all college free. And you go, hold on a second, you just said $1.3 trillion, and then you said free in the same sentence. Are you an idiot, or do you think we are idiots? Which is it?
That's exactly it, and what the people, average person in America does not realize. We have about a $4 trillion a year budget, I believe it is. If you're talking about $1.3 trillion, you're talking about the majority of the budget. In fact, what they're talking about with the Green New Deal would be the equivalent of 10 years of 100% taxation on the citizens, and 100% of the taxation going into the Green New Deal just to fund what they're talking about in that program. Greg, there is one good point that could come from the coronavirus, and I'll touch on this. Then we'll introduce our next caller, and we're going to have a little three-part conversation then. Here's an article that says, China expert says, coronavirus could lead to the collapse of the Communist Party. The Chinese Communist Party's secretive handling of the coronavirus could lead to its collapse in the same way that the Chernobyl nuclear disaster contributed to the Soviet Union's demise, an expert on China said Friday. Gordon Chang said in his interview with Just the News at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington, D.C., that people in China are talking about Chernobyl. The secrecy surrounding the 1986 disaster led to the failure of the Soviet Union within a half decade, he noted. Maybe we're starting to see the same dynamic now, but the Communist Party certainly is weakened, and it's fighting to keep itself in place. He said the Chinese Communist Party is in deep trouble, end quote. We'll talk about that in a moment, but I believe we have a caller on the line. Go over with the question or comment, please.
Yeah, just to inject a couple thoughts. You know, even if the virus spreads and there's multiple deaths in America, I believe sovereignly and providentially that deity will have Trump be reelected. And number two, and then I'm hanging up, I'd like you, Greg and Papa, to discuss any pitfalls with capitalism. I'm a capitalist, but I've heard the term predatory capitalism. And do you see a dark side? Capitalism. God bless you both. Bye.
Thank you so much for your insight and for your question. Greg, let me give a statement and then I'll turn it over to you to let you continue to answer that question about the dark side or the problems, the pitfalls with capitalism. I believe the capitalistic system, first of all, is the greatest system on a global basis. We can go back to the fact that in the first century church, the Christians tried socialism. They tried it on the basis that everybody would bring and share alike, and wound up with some sitting down doing nothing, eating at the table. That's the reason in 2 Thessalonians, the Apostle Paul ultimately said, if you don't work, you shouldn't eat. And I believe that's the standard today. Howbeit, we understand that if there are those that are disabled, unable, and cannot, that we need to be benevolent as a nation to try to care for them to the degree that we can. I believe, however, even with that, if a person has a disability, he can't walk, let's say, he ought to be able to work with his hands and have a job. And vice versa, if there's a problem in different areas with physicality, he should have some capability of doing something. If so, he needs to be productive to the degree that he can be with the gifts, talents, and abilities that God gives him. But when it comes to socialism and communism, in that system, it destroys our First Amendment rights and the religious liberties and the freedom of speech. It destroys anything that's called Christianity. Now, with capitalism, there are those that you call the predator lenders, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the major, if I could emphasize it again, say major things that is the cause and effect with that is that we have rules, regulations, and laws on the books made many times by those that are the predators, and therefore they make the laws that it will give them an exception that they can be the predator in that lending or the predator in the capitalistic system. And it's not because the capitalistic system is bad, but it's because of the formation of rules, regulations, and laws that allow that to take place. Greg, what do you say to that?
Well, I love the question. The reality is we've watched over, 100 years as kleptocrats, as crony capitalism has taken over the marketplace. Today, many of your, multi-billion dollar, even trillion dollar companies, those companies are invariably tied back to government officials. That's why the K Street lobbyist, these folks are very, very well paid. If you're a mega business person, you better have somebody on K Street that's walking over, to folks on Capitol Hill and working them over. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington kind of covers some of that. The notion that graft can get you what you want. Well, that's kind of where we are. We've devolved to that point. It's not capitalism. It's kleptocrats. It's individuals in government that use government to pick the winners and pick the losers. That's why you have companies. I have nothing against Amazon. Amazon has been a fantastic company. Has grown like absolutely exponentially. It's grown. However, you find that Amazon doesn't pay much of anything in taxes. The capital gains for the stockholders, yeah, but they move into an area and the city, state, local government will, federal government even will roll out the red carpet to get them to base their operations, because all of a sudden they're going to employ all these people. And they'll give them tax breaks that go out 5 years, 10 years. But they do that, in the state of Tennessee. If you have a business that's going to bring more than $5 million in economic impact to an area, they roll out the red carpet. Do they do that for the business that starts on a shoestring out of the garage? No, sir. Yet, the real job growth in America comes from the shoestring operating out of the garage. It comes from the mom and pops. However, because there is so much influence that comes out of these state houses and Capitol Hill, those lobbyists, they get paid very well to go and make sure that government will roll out the red carpet. Tesla, great. This guy, he kind of reinvented the wheel, didn't he, with the Tesla motors. However, you saw early on with the tax subsidies, $20,000 per unit tax subsidies. I believe that was the number initially. So people were buying a $100,000 car and getting a $20,000 subsidy. Well, in my view, capitalism is great when you don't have a kleptocrat that's in there picking the winners and picking the losers. They're putting the thumbs on the thumb on the scale in order to give assistance, and these folks are also able to do things on Capitol Hill. Your representatives and your congressmen, unless they've changed things, they're still involved in insider trading. They can sit in a committee meeting that is blocked, access is blocked to the general public, and they can hear that all of a sudden Pfizer or Gilead or whatever is going to have an approval on a particular pharmaceutical, and they can call their broker and say, "Hey, I want a call option for 100,000 shares, 200,000 shares, and lever, whatever the ratio is, 1,000-to-1 ratio, and they can become millionaires overnight. That's why you see representatives and senators sometimes, they go up on Capitol Hill, and they aren't worth anything. Bernie Sanders, I think he said his net worth was $1,100 or $1,400 when he went to Capitol Hill. What's he worth today? Millions? Millions?
Yes.
And I don't know how much of that was stock trading, but the reality is the kleptocrats are literally robbing us blind, and they are setting up the winners and setting up the losers. And unless you have a good lobbyist, guess what? You're probably going to be a loser. That's not a capitalism problem. That's a bureaucracy problem. That's a Washington, D.C. problem. That is not a capitalism problem. Capitalism, governed by, restrained by Christian influence, is the best system on earth. Capitalism has raised more people out of poverty than any other economic system on the face of the planet ever. Ever.
Right.
America, with our growth, with our expansion under capitalism, we have raised countries out of poverty because we have bought products from China and bought products from Taiwan, bought products from Vietnam, bought products from Malaysia, areas of the world that would literally still be in the dark ages if it were not for capitalism.
Yes. By the way, Greg, let's switch gears for just a moment. And by the way, for our listeners, this is Dr. Youngblood. You're tuned in to Let's Face the Issues. The telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. Greg, there is some good news. The good news is that Pete Buttigieg dropped out of the race. he's no longer, the sodomite's no longer running for president. And that, may I say also, the damage that he's done to America is incalculable, I believe. Who would have expected, or who would have thought, that a 37-year-old nobody sodomite mayor from a small town could become president of America in some fashion? his ability to raise millions upon millions of dollars and rally hundreds of thousands of people to follow him would have been impossible just 20 years ago. And yet our nation has been desensitized of sexual morality, and he is a good example of that as one of the key leaders of the LGBTQ agenda in America. What is your response to the news that Pete Buttigieg has dropped out of the race?
Well, I'm glad to see three more of them need to drop out of the race. I think, quite frankly, if you follow the money, and that's something in politics, you follow the money, you find the truth. If you follow the money, I think you'll probably find people like Pete were paid to get in and paid to run and perhaps paid to get out. Just depends on who's paying the tab. But, you know, Pete had a way of pulling some votes from that middle of the road. And they're all extreme left, but if you're going to be middle of the road, extreme left, that's kind of where he was. And Bloomberg probably would like to see him gone so Bloomberg can get a few more votes. But as to the sexuality, when the lost world's involved in all sorts of immorality, guess what? That's what the lost world does. But that boy claims to be a Christian.
That's right.
He claims to be a Christian, and that's the problem I have with him, because when you claim to be a Christian, you're also saying, I accept the authority of the Word of God. That's what I believe you're saying. And based on the authority of the Word of God, he's got some major problems, and they're not just doctrinal problems. It's definitive, ingrained, deep, sinful problems, and he's blamed God on his sin. Don't do that, folks. Just don't do that. I'm glad to see he's out. I'm glad to see he'll no longer be taking the stage and encouraging a 9-year-old to come out. You know, 9-year-olds that really – you know, it should have nothing going on in their lives when it comes to sexual interest or activity. So what's a 9-year-old doing coming out? Now, I believe a 9-year-old can be influenced. I believe a 9-year-old can be even recruited.
That's what he was doing openly, Greg. If I can interject this, that's what Pete Buttigieg was doing on that stage openly. He was openly recruiting that 9-year-old boy to the lifestyle of a sodomite life. And I find that absolutely horrible, of the sexualization of our children. Greg, we've got about 30 seconds left in this broadcast. Take a moment on that subject, and let's talk about the reason. Let's close out the broadcast today with the reason, as Christians, we should be concerned about who is out there on the stage running for president and how we should respond as Christians.
As believers, we need to constantly realize what one generation tolerates, the next generation will embrace. We should never lead the next generation down a path, a dark path, an evil path, a wicked path. As believers, we're to be salt and light. Stand up for what's right. Speak the truth in love, and this world will be getting better and not worse. It seems like we're getting worse day by day.
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to the next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
President of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them. 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.